From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. This week has been so beautiful. It actually feels like it's sort of been going in slow motion, but in fact, a lot of wheels have been spinning, especially on the political scene, both locally and nationally. The Boston Globe's report that Mitt Romney held a CEO title at Bain 3 years longer than he claimed reached critical mass this week, with the Romney camp trying to deflect the fallout by leaking out potential VP candidates. So we'll start there in our Week in Review. Later, thumbs up, thumbs down on Ray Allen leaving the Celtics and banning the American flag at housing projects. All right, joining me here in the studio is Charlie Chipio from Chipio Strategies, State Senator Bob Hedlund, and Jack Sullivan, Senior Investigative Reporter for Commonwealth Magazine. You know what struck me about this Boston Globe report is that, and I know they had to go back and credit both Mother Jones and Talking Points Memo, but why is it that the story didn't break into the national arena until the Globe did it? I mean, I thought they had remarkable reporting. They had those SEC filings and reports and the data and the claims. I hadn't seen those memos before. Maybe other people had, but I don't know. Why didn't it break through earlier?
I think part of it is that the Globe is Romney's hometown paper, and on top of that, they were able to bring in the State Ethics Commission forms that went with it as well. But it's still a newspaper-driven agenda, I think, in a lot of ways, the presidential election. You know, most of the stuff that you see that resonates comes from the New York Times, Washington Post, in this case, the Globe. But I also agree with you. I think it was fantastic reporting.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah, they did have to advance it. They did have to go back and credit Talking Points and Mother Jones. And Mother Jones did a terrific job on their end as well. But I think they advanced it quite a bit.
Yeah, they did. I had never seen that before. Is it a big deal, though, Bob? Do you think people care?
I don't think so. I mean, I would say no, only because of the fallout since the initial Globe story. I mean, for instance, yesterday CNN has refuted a lot of the Obama charges that have come along in conjunction with the story. For instance, and I think factcheck.org is questioning some of the Obama claims relating to the story. Yeah. So I think in that sense, it's tamped it down somewhat. I mean, I don't think that the presidential election should be a referendum on Bain. I mean, this is going to get tedious. I think people have an opinion about Bain's role in the economy and the kind of businesses like Bain play a role in the economy. You have some Democrats who probably think that, gee, all job creation comes from government, and other people feel like the Bains of the world play an important role in our economy. And I think that issue is pretty much settled in people's minds.
I think this is one of many things that's going to become tedious between now and November.
Yeah,
It just strikes me as a stupid mistake. It's one that you shouldn't have let happen.
Because the Romney people are claiming that the documents were just a formality.
You signed them under the pain and penalty of perjury. I mean, right. that's not just a formality. I mean, that's a significant, not even an oversight. It's a significant error. And I think it was
an error?
Well, the fact that he hasn't talked about it until now, yeah. It's is an error, but I think the bigger issue here, and I disagree with Bob, I think it is going to be a big issue, is he takes credit for the jobs created through Bain, and a lot of the jobs that are created that he takes credit for happened after 99. Well, this puts him in place to be responsible for the job losses as well, and I think that's significant. And the Globe had that commissioner yesterday who also said, you're not supposed to submit erroneous documents to the SEC. They are serious documents. They're not supposed to have falsifications or disputed facts in them.
And look, the bottom line is that the average person doesn't understand any of that anyway. All they know is that whether it's ministerial, like the one guy said, or not, that, you know, he he filed these things with the SEC, and that's what they understand. And so to them, it's true. Now, I do think that Obama has helped the Romney people by kind of overplaying his hand in the aftermath. But
yeah.
I don't think this is one that's just going to go away immediately. Do I think it's going to be huge? No, but I think it's one of those points that's going to stick around.
Yeah, I can agree. I don't think you want to toss out the word felony.
Yeah.
In the immediate aftermath.
But I mean, even Bill Clinton got into the act. He jumped on it yesterday. His little what he had to say.
All your work life before you run for president is relevant, and I think that will be relevant. I mean, I'm a little surprised that he only released a year's worth of tax returns. That's kind of perplexed me because this is the first time in, I don't know, more than 30 years that anybody running for president has only done that.
Hmm. You know, that is an interesting question. Why doesn't he, Bob? Do you have a theory on that?
Maybe because he's the first president in 30 years that actually had a real job in the real world, maybe. I don't know. I mean,
well, not in the last 2 years he hasn't.
Or
not
has
in the last
2 years. No, I understand. But, you know, I don't know. Quoting Bill Clinton, I mean, wasn't he the guy that defended Bain a little while ago or these types of companies? So, you know, I got to take what Clinton says with a grain of salt right now. But I don't think it's a big deal. We know the guy's got a lot of dough. He probably, you know, doesn't want that perception.
But we already know he has $250 million.
I know.
I don't think it's about where
he made the money that he's going to be concerned.
Right. Well, it's also the fact that his father kind of set the standard for this, for what's going to be released. But I think what's happening as well here, and it's another issue that's going to come back to bite them, is this sense of blind trust. You know, they're starting to hit on the offshore accounts and stuff.
Right.
And Mother Jones just came out with this report, I believe it was yesterday, that part of his investment was in a Chinese company that makes money off of outsourced U.S. jobs. Well, that kind of undercuts his claim about China being such a threat to our economy. And then when he's talking about offshore accounts, he puts his arms up in the air and says, well, it's in a blind trust. I don't have anything to say where it goes. And then suddenly somebody finds that 1994 clip between him and Ted Kennedy where Mitt Romney's saying, well, blind trusts are just ruses. You can't hide behind that. Well, he's being bitten by his own words and his own documents.
Do you think Mitt Romney was surprised this week when he got booed at the NAACP?
Absolutely not.
No.
That was probably something that was discussed by his advisors and said, you know, this is the way it's going to play out.
So he wanted that to happen?
I think it looked like, you know, the tough guy going into the tiger's den and being strong and being forceful and sticking with his convictions and not pandering to one particular crowd or another. And I think that's the way they hoped it would play out, and it did play out that way.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see a picture of Eric Fernstrom standing behind him with a sign that says boo.
I don't know. I mean, it sort of looked like he was pandering, though, didn't you think, Charlie?
I think he was pandering for booze.
Right.
I mean, he was throwing the buzzwords out there, Obamacare, and he was hitting on all the right themes to try to elicit a boo.
Yeah, I mean, he clearly needs to look like he is a man of principles and, you know, he has to try to do everything he can to combat the whole flip-flop thing. It just seems to me that, at least in my lifetime, you know, every single election since John Anderson, you know, got onto the map in 1980 by going to the NAACP and talking about how he believed in gun control, that there's just some episode of this, you know, I just think it's the latest. Not really any more than that, I don't think.
All right. Well, we want to talk about what's been going on Beacon Hill too, Bob. I mean, I know the legislature was in session all this week. So this is about the governor signed.
Not quite all this week,
like not today. You're in your shorts and T-shirt. Governor Romney signed a $32.5 billion budget this past week and vetoed about almost close to $32 million, I guess it was, including some of the restrictions on EBT cards, and then he also vetoed this thing, which I don't understand why is in the budget. I was trying to get to the bottom of that the other day, but requiring that people show proof of residency before they register their car.
That was my amendment, by the way.
Well, why is that a budget item? Let's start right there.
I can simplify that.
We have what's known as outside sections or riders, and the problem with the legislature right now is there's a lot of inaction. We have things bottled up in committee. I think we have in my time on Beacon Hill right now, we probably have a record number of bills that have not been reported out by committees. They've got extension orders or they're in studies. So legislators use the budget process to try to advance those things that are bottled up. Now, we've actually debated and we've voted in five different vehicles since 2005, my amendment to eliminate the X registrations. This is the first time. It's passed the Senate five times. This is the first time that the House concurred with us. So for me, that was a significant—
To eliminate the what?
To eliminate the so-called X registrations, where you can go in and register a car in Massachusetts without a valid driver's license. They actually, the conference committee actually put stronger language in, ironically, than mine, that said you needed to provide proof of legal residence. That's the one word the governor amended in the veto message was, I sent it back with an amendment, taking out the word legal.
Legal.
He just took out the word legal and said provide proof of residence. So that's what we did yesterday and the House did the day before in sending it back to him with our original language.
He's not going to pass it anyway.
Well, he may veto the entire section now, and I'll tell you, it'll be overridden in record time because of the way he went about in issuing the vetoes and insulting members of the legislature, specifically as it related to EBT.
The EBT cards,
was foolish. And, you know, if that's his auditioning for a ambassadorship in the Obama administration, it doesn't show a lot of diplomatic skills.
But he called your amendment, you know, Arizona-style legislation, that's referring to Jan Brewer in Arizona. You
it's
know,
absolutely
basically the
preposterous.
Stop and search.
That's preposterous. Yeah. You know, first of all, it's a complete loophole in our system of public safety and registering automobiles. It's crazy to say that. It has nothing – it relates in no way, shape, or form anything what Arizona has done. So to say that is just an inflammatory, silly comment on the part of the governor.
I think one of the things that struck me, and I was talking to my boss, Bruce, about this the other day.
Bruce Moll from Commonwealth, yeah.
Yeah. The number of people that voted to override those three items, you know, it was, what, 140 to 11 or 149 to
11. In one case, there were only two
case.
Votes with the governor in the House, and in the other case, there were eight.
Yeah, I was just stunned by the number of people on both sides of the aisle that voted to override it. And Bob's probably going to go into cardiac arrest here. I don't have a problem with the EBT restrictions. You know, it's... I mean, you probably don't want somebody.
You shouldn't, because what we did on EBT is incremental window dressing. It doesn't get to the heart of where the root of the abuses lie. The EBT window dressing stuff, I don't want to say it was a joke, but it was very, very minor. And for the governor to even veto or try to change and amend those minuscule changes is silly.
He went along with a lot of the recommendations for what an EBT card can be used for. Basically, what he was saying is you can't make – shop owners and store owners
Correct.
Be the gatekeepers.
Right.
For,
I mean, but
you can ban selling for – you can't use an EBT
okay,
card
so,
in a
so
package
we,
store.
So we pass a provision that says you can't go and get a tattoo with an EBT card. Simple. All you have to do is walk across the street, go into the ATM, take the money out, and go in and buy the tattoo. So until we actually address the cash – benefit portion of this program, we're never going to get
and
serious
reform. And
steadfast
on that, saying things like people need money for cab rides and
correct.
That kind of thing.
But the point is, the point I'm trying to make is that debate will continue because that's the crux of the problem, and a lot of legislators believe that that portion of the program needs to be addressed.
But I think the one that really struck me was the Taunton State Hospital one. I mean, it's what, 42, 45 beds that it affects something like
that? I thought
it was
like a little more than that, but
isn't that right?
It really is... And I don't mean to demean what they've done down at Taunton State Hospital, but it really is a pork barrel type of override. You know, it's a snub to the governor, and it really says something about his relationship,
okay.
I think.
I want to bring Charlie in on this because my theory about all the override stuff this week was that the legislature, both the House and the Senate, was miffed because the governor – insulted them and say, you know, sort of offhanded insults like, well, we're not in the business of humiliating poor people, and then calling Bob's amendment Arizona style. So it says, like, if he didn't agree, he has this approach that's kind of insulting and derogatory as opposed to just saying, rather than on policy, he makes a derogatory.
Yeah, I mean, look, and Bob certainly is closer to this than I am, but the thing I always say is that during my couple of years working in the Romney administration, I always thought that I would never again see a governor that was more disliked by the legislature. But I think here, just a matter of a very few years later, we may well see a governor that is more disliked by the legislature. And I mean, my list of grievances with DeVal Patrick is longer than we can discuss in this show today. But as a guy who clearly sees himself as a future president, I his actions recently.
So?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't.
Oh, absolutely. Zero doubt about that.
I have to tell you, he has the ability to charm anyone. On a one-on-one basis, he's a warm, friendly guy. Mm-hmm. What I see happening here is a lack of homework, really. I think a lack of him doing his homework. I've heard legislators complain about local issues where he hasn't been up to speed, and they've taken it as an insult, for instance, that he wasn't aware of a particular issue in the district. I mean, making these comments about these particular amendments or vetoes that he did shows that I don't think he grasped the issue unless he was just simply trying to go out of his way to tweak everybody.
That may be true, but what I tell you, what you see from the outside is someone who's unbelievably self-righteous, who's just always like, well, you know, you thoughtless people, let me give you the word. It just makes me crazy, I'll stop there.
There's a bit of a double standard here, though. I mean, we're always talking about how professional politicians are just backslappers and, you know, they know how to grease the skids and go with the flow. And here we have a guy, granted he's in his second term as governor, but he really has not been a politician up until that point. You know, is he as polished as – you know, some of the others that we've seen come through here, whether it's Sal DeMasi or, you know, even Mike Dukakis, who came up through the House. No, but...
But the problem, Jack, is that he does all the same stuff. Look at the front page of the Globe today, where he once again, you know, changes his mind, costs all these firms incredible amounts of money by slapping a project labor agreement on this $285 million bridge project.
Yeah.
He does that stuff all the time.
I disagree with Jack, though. He is one of the smoothest politicians to hit the scene up there in a long time. I mean, he could take candy from a baby. He is smooth as silk. This is just
He's
stuff.
Never running for president. I disagree with you on that, Charlie.
I will.
1,000%.
I think
we're on record. We're going to do that.
Yeah,
right,
I find that a little far-fetched, too.
Far-fetched.
I'm with Emily on that one.
Yeah.
He's running.
All right, talking to State Senator Bob Hedlund, Jack Sullivan from Commonwealth Magazine, and Charlie Chipio of Chipio Strategies. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, did you guys catch Patriots owner Bob Kraft acting debut before it got pulled off of YouTube? Well, we have a copy. We'll have a listen, plus thumbs up, thumbs down. I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio. It's our Week in Review. Here with me in Studio 3 are Jack Sullivan, Senior Investigative Reporter for Commonwealth Magazine, State Senator Bob Hedlund, and Charlie Chipio, a principal at Chipio Strategies. All right, so earlier this week, that YouTube video, I landed in my inbox at like 7 o'clock in the morning. I think it was Wednesday. So this is an audition tape that Bob Kraft did in the Patriots studio in Foxborough, and he's got his lady friend Ricky Lander there, and she's auditioning for a movie with Owen Wilson. And anyway, she's standing there. Everybody saw it, but I'm going to describe it anyway. She's got on an itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny bikini, not polka dot, but I think it was leopard print. He's got on like a sweater, and you know, he looks like he's about ready to go to a football game. He's reading these lines, and then there's some other awkward guy there, but I can't even play the whole thing. And I could only watch it once. Believe it or not, I only watched it once. But here's a little of the so-called audition tape.
Hi, you were really good up there. I didn't mean that in a sexual way, but not that it wasn't erotic.
I am so embarrassed.
Well, now we're even, because dancing in front of you was one of the most embarrassing moments in my life.
No offense, but I get guys like you in my classes all the time.
Okay, this is a yikes. And not because, I have to say, I am not one to criticize or judge anybody, having lost my husband. So I have to say, you know, you can't judge what anybody needs to fill, you know, grief or just even happiness. So I have no problem, believe it or not, with the girlfriend. I had a real problem with the things that he said, which we can't even put on the air. I mean, what was he thinking? The thing was embarrassing, awkward, and it made him look like a doddering old fool, even bordering on an Alzheimer's patient.
One of the best comments I saw was a friend of mine put it on her Facebook, and somebody posted, he brought the Patriots back from the dead. He built us a shopping center. Let's just look away. You know, and that's really the way I felt about it.
I know.
I totally agree with you. I have no problem. I mean, obviously, he's had a terrible
yeah,
year,
terrible.
I'm sure.
People are judging him on that.
And right. And if this is making things easier for him, you know, good for him. But, boy, this just was awful. This just looked really bad.
I don't know if to Emily's comment, doddering old fool. I don't have anything else to add, really, to that.
Yeah.
But I think certainly their acting skills are suspect.
You know, here's the other problem with this is that if the Patriots have a bad season or start to have a bad season, you know they're going to – somebody's going to make the connection here. They're going to turn it around and blame, you know, Ricky Lander or, you know, Bob Kraft's distraction or something.
The Yoko Ono of the Patriots
yes,
or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There you go.
It's interesting, though, because the media actually has a real love affair with Bob Kraft. I was thinking that really nobody did much with this. They put it on the gossip pages. Nobody made a big story about it, unlike when Tom Brady's ex-girlfriend, Bridget Moynihan, announced she was pregnant with his child. That was front page, above the fold news. That was not in names. That was not in the gossip pages like the Track. I mean, so why was this minimized?
I think the Herald had Marjorie's column teased out front.
But it was a column. It wasn't a news story.
No, but the headline was great. You know, he goes over Viagra Falls.
Yeah, that was a big. I know he likes
you know, this type of I guess, acting scene and everything. I have a friend who ran one of the theaters in Boston, and to celebrate Myrna's birthday one year, he rented the entire theater and just had 10 close friends in to observe the production. So he's got a history of enjoying this kind of thing. But
I think Emily is right. You know, I certainly have never gone through the kind of situation he went through last year. And I was talking to Charlie about this beforehand. I remember all season long, every time they showed the box during a game, you just look at him and you say, gee, that guy looks lonely.
Yeah,
that's
he looks
so
sad.
Bad.
Yeah.
And you know what? If he's found a little happiness,
yeah.
you know, if he's you good know, blown him. Off a little steam, good for him.
Yeah.
Just keep him away from cameras.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, this is a smart guy, though. I mean, I realize he was reading a script, but, I mean, the fact that he would use words that, you know, he doesn't speak like that. I mean, wouldn't you have edited it out?
He was trying to get in character, Emily. No, that was what the script called for.
I mean, I'm on board with Emily on this because this is a team that, you know, has cut loose players for, you know,
beating up
conduct
their wives.
Unbecoming and,
right.
you know.
Posing practically nude for magazines like Gronkowski.
I mean, going back,
I mean, are we talking about
Dave Meggett
kind of
10
stuff?
Years ago? I mean, he's been doing this kind of stuff.
Well, you know, we got a pattern here with sports owners and courting younger women with John Henry setting the precedent. So,
and then who's that toe sucker? What's his name? Rex Ryan?
Oh, Rex Ryan and his wife, yeah.
What can I say? All right, well, speaking of creepy.
My life is so boring.
Report. I know, really. the report.
He needs a little money, Charlie.
That came out yesterday and today from the Penn State study that former FBI Director Louis Free released was shocking even beyond, I mean, they did a heck of a job, too, I have to say. Went back and got, I don't know where all those records came from, even all the quotes and all the people. And everybody, to a person, knew many more specifics, including, of course, former coach Joe Paterno, about what Jerry Sandusky had been accused of doing. And they had long and years-long discussions about how to keep it, you know, within the family and make sure the news media and what to do if the news media did find out and how to deal personally with Jerry on this as opposed to – it was just truly, truly disturbing.
Yeah, unbelievable. I know. I'm rarely at a loss for words.
Well, I don't want to say it's sad because clearly he deserves it even, you know, if he has passed away. But a 60-year career is in total shambles now because of this, and deservedly so. If you believe even half of what Louis Free said yesterday, it's just horrendous. But I think that the bigger point is that Penn State is going to pay the price for this, and I do believe that they're going to get it, what they call in the NCAA the death penalty, that they're going to kill their athletic department.
You think so? Wow.
Because, well, this goes beyond – I mean, you look at some of the Ohio State, the ramifications they had, the suspensions they had over tattoos,
right.
You know, or SMU for back in the 70s for some of the recruiting violations that they had. This was a man who was using the Penn State program as a predatory attraction for young children.
Right.
I mean, he used the program, so you can't say it's separate.
No, and I think, you know, I think you're right in terms of the precedent. You know, if you follow the precedent, I guess from my point of view, and you know, Shaughnessy wrote about this today in the Globe. I have trouble with the death penalty here, as they call it, because you know, the only people it punishes are the later generations of people who had nothing to do with this, and the new coach who, by all you know, by all reports, is clean. You know, what I would rather see is I would rather just see them. Penn State just get cleaned out with settlements here and really have to, you know, pay for what they've done. I'm not sure that the right people get punished with the death penalty, but that's, I don't know, that's my view.
Well, I think they have to send a message to serve as a warning to other programs that you can't be an enabler, you can't allow these things to happen within your program. So I think, I don't know about the death penalty, but some kind of sanction I think is appropriate.
But is it really the NCAA's position to be doing this, or shouldn't
Absolutely.
It be Penn State?
I think as one part of this discussion, they are certainly the policing entity as it relates to the program. Sure, absolutely.
But of course, there is great irony there because the short of like one of the major boxing associations, it's hard to find an organization more corrupt than the NCAA. So.
That's what I'm getting at. You really want the NCAA policing this?
Well, I'm not saying the ultimate arbiter of everything involved in the scandal, but as it relates to the sports program, sure, absolutely. Aside from all of the law enforcement aspects.
Who commissioned this Louis Freeh study?
Penn State. They brought him in themselves.
So they must have known that this could be the outcome.
Yeah, and to their credit, they gave him full access. They had something like 4.5 million documents and emails that they were able to review. They interviewed over 400 people. So, I mean, this was a fairly extensive, no matter what you hear from the paternal apologist, an extensive.
Bob, the thing that's disturbing about this, it's very reminiscent of the Boston Archdiocese, the Catholic Church, and to any end to protect the people who are sort of one of us. And was Jerry Sandusky that important to that organization? If it had been Joe Paterno, maybe I could see them protecting him. But an assistant coach who's caught raping kids in a shower, and they feel it's necessary to protect him. I don't think
the other part of this that puzzles me is you have this scandal going on behind the scenes, and it just is suppressed for so long before it finally gets out there. You wonder how that happens.
I think Emily's perfect analogy is the Archdiocese. Yes, sure. You know, not just Boston, but all the other, you know, the Vatican down in Louisiana. And
so that makes Paterno the Pope,
right? Yeah. Basically.
He was.
Or the Archbishop.
You know, it wasn't about protecting Sandusky. It was about protecting the institution. Right. I mean, that's what it was about. I don't think they care about Sandusky.
Oh, but if one guy had been fired back then for, you know, it would have been a news story for sure, but would it have been?
Well, I think part of it too is that not that I'm in his head, but it has to go through them that we're recruiting 17 and 18 year old boys here. We're going into their families' homes. If there's even a taint of something like this, how do you convince a parent that your son is going to be safe with us? And don't worry about that ex coach there.
All right. Well, we had one other issue this week that was rather uncomfortable, and I'll have Bob speak to that in a second. But over the weekend, a state rep from Roxbury, Dorchester, I guess, was arrested and charged with domestic violence, Carlos Henriquez. And then he had been really spinning the story, saying, you know, he had been charged with punching this girl, picking her up at 2 in the morning, keeping her against her will for 2.5 hours, holding her wrists and punching her in the with a closed fist, scratching her legs. So he was kind of tweeting out things saying, you know, I'll be completely cleared. And, you know, I guess he never thought she would speak out, but she did. She didn't say much, but here's a little what Catherine Gonzalez said, and she was very effective.
My credibility has been questioned, and my private life has become topic of speculation. Why? Because the man I was dating hit me, and he's a public figure. Some media outlets have withheld my name from their stories. I appreciate the sensitivity these media outlets have shown, but I'm not afraid to speak out and have my voice heard.
Hmm. Did you know Carlos Henriquez at all?
It's interesting you ask that question. He's a freshman Democrat, obviously. I don't believe I serve on any committees with him that I'm aware of, and I did not know him or meet him. However, I was quoted in a story in the Herald that the Herald's been covering relating to some of our driving laws. And he actually reached out to me, called me, wanted to talk about something that he had read that he agreed with that I said in the paper, and wanted to work with me in the upcoming session on a particular initiative I was involved in. It showed me someone who took his job seriously, was diligent. I appreciated that. It would be a good person to work with across the aisle, different branch. And I played phone tag with him. And then when I didn't hear back from him recently, I suspected maybe why. But this is unfortunate. You know, there's obviously going to be two sides to the story, and we'll have to let the legal system sort this out. But that was my only contact with him was actually a voice in a voicemail. But it showed me that he was someone that took his job seriously anyway.
I thought her response was devastating for him. Yeah. That clip that you just played, it's the idea that a victim is empowered. You know, you always hear about that, but here's a woman who embraced that. You know, I'm not hiding. You know, I am the victim here.
Yeah, very courageous
and,
on her part.
Right, and she's so very articulate.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, she presented herself very well, and that's going to be a problem for
him. Yeah, she was sick of him saying it wasn't true.
Right.
You know, said, you know, meanwhile, he has said he'll be vindicated, and we shall see about that, as you say. But it doesn't look good for Carlos right now, I have to say. All right, we are going to move on now to our ever-popular thumbs up, thumbs down on the people, places, and issues in the news this week. I'm speaking to State Senator Bob Hedlund, Charlie Chipio from Chipio Strategies, and Jack Sullivan from Commonwealth Magazine. All right, let's see. Let's see if we've got honest Injuns here. Thumbs up, thumbs down. You were disappointed, Bob, to learn that the shark chasing that kayaker turned out to be harmless.
Not really, because I was a teenager when Jaws came out, and that was a big craze that summer. And some of my buddies thought it would be funny to create fake shark fins and swim around Hingham Harbor and Weymouth Bay. I'm not disappointed.
Oh, I was. Come on.
Yeah, I was really hoping it was.
Of course.
You know, I mean, because that was such a dramatic.
Has there ever been
picture.
A better photo in the history?
Oh,
of-
oh yeah.
You would have
yeah,
devastated. You would have devastated our economy at the height of the tourist season.
Oh,
here.
No,
come on.
Did you see how crowded that beach was in the days after that? That did not devastate.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Jaws, Bob, everything has turned around. People are now flocking to the beaches, flocking into the water to see a shark. It used to be they were running during the '70s, right? It's the exact opposite has happened. So. You can admit you were disappointed. I wasn't.
I
bet the surfer himself, I bet the kayaker himself was a little disappointed.
Yeah.
Although I had a shark expert on the other day, and he told me that those basking sharks grow to as long as 30 feet. So it's very possible. Remember he said he thought the head was under the boat?
Yeah.
So he could have definitely upended them, but he wouldn't have been eaten because they only eat plankton.
He would have been gummed.
Yeah. Yeah, he would have been gummed, right? Like Martha Stewart's cat or whatever.
Really? All right, we've got a number of sports-related thumbs up, thumbs down here today. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Rob Gronkowski bearing all for ESPN Magazine.
Thumbs down. It reminds me of Nomar Garciaparra on the Sports Illustrated cover.
Yeah, I would say thumbs down, and I'd say thumbs down for ESPN Magazine. It's the worst sports magazine in the history of publishing.
There you go. I think that Rob Gronkowski is repeatedly demonstrating that despite what a great tight end he is, that, you know, the long term prognosis. Yeah. The long term prognosis with him and the Patriots organization may not be too good because he continually seems to do these things that.
Seriously, now, I mean this sincerely. I'm giving it a thumbs up. I think, you know, I mean, it wasn't offensive, was it?
I long for the days when, you know, the sporting news covered sports. ESPN Magazine is this over-the-top effort to try to appeal to the Y generation and be hip and be – the magazine is ridiculous. There's no real sports reporting in the magazine.
Don't read it.
I don't.
I've never seen it before.
You're not missing
issue.
Anything.
It's not bad, but I mean, I take exception because, like I said, the swimsuit issue, when I was a kid, we eagerly awaited.
They're reaching out to a new market. Must be me. You know, I'll have to go out and get it.
Right.
All right, thumbs up, thumbs down on Ray Allen saying he will always be a Celtic.
I think he's going to get booed in Miami more than he is Boston now. I say thumbs up for us, thumbs down for Miami.
Yeah, thumbs up. The guy was a class act, and I don't have a problem with him moving on. And I don't think it's a blow to the Celtics, to be honest with you.
I say thumbs up. I think Ray Allen is one of the rare athletes who just has conducted himself just with no blemishes whatsoever. I'm going to really
miss him here. Yeah. I mean, thumbs up to Ray Allen as well. All right, thumbs up, thumbs down. Here's a policy one for you, Bob Hedlund. On the Rentham public housing officials banning U.S. flags flying outside apartments.
This wasn't complicated. I would say thumbs down, obviously, but thumbs down for a cowardly-like response from DHCD. They blame DHCD. They put flyers under the doors of the tenants with no name, no contact information, just basically saying, you know, this isn't allowed. And then when they reverse course, there were no names associated with it. Someone at DHCD that initiated this action should get fired, plain and simple.
All right. Moving right along. Let's see. Thumbs up, thumbs down on Steven Tyler leaving American Idol.
Thumbs up.
I got to say, I have never seen American Idol.
I haven't either.
So, you know, good for him. Good for thumbs up.
I have to say, I thought his comments were rather classy because I interviewed Tom Hamilton just a few weeks ago and he was saying, look, this gig takes 6 months a year. So they can't be on tour for those 6 months. I mean, that is a huge time commitment.
Wow.
And so basically what Steven Tyler was saying was that he got distracted and he lost his mission. And so I thought I give him a thumbs up for saying the band is more important to him. And this was a complete distraction and it was fun while it lasted. But
I think you're dead on. I have a friend who is serving as Aerosmith's lighting director on their tour. And he sent me a Facebook message yesterday. Very excited about the news because what this meant was add-on dates.
Yep.
And I think that was the conflict. I think you're exactly right what the problem was. And he chose the band over the pop phenomenon.
Our final thumbs up, thumbs down is the U.S. Olympic team wearing outfits made in China. Here's Senator Harry Reid.
I think the Olympic Committee should be ashamed of themselves. I think they should be embarrassed. I think they should take all the uniforms, put them in a big pile and burn them and start all over again.
Thumbs up, thumbs down on the U.S. Olympic team outfits being made in China.
You know, I want to see Harry Reid's canceled check of his donation to the Olympic Committee. All of these people complaining about it. It's, you know, every piece of clothing that people wear at home is made, you know, in China. Everything they have at home is made in China.
Should we check his labels?
Yeah, if you didn't donate and you didn't and you have only American-made stuff at home, fine.
Thumbs down to Harry Reid, Congress, and a series of administrations who have engaged in trade policies that have led to this situation.
Who knew that Harry Reid was a Tea Party darling? Did you hear that quote? I'll tell you. You know, this is just stupid from a PR point of view. I mean, thumbs down. This is something that should have been avoided.
They should have. I agree. They should have figured out a way to have those things made in America. All right. That's going to do it for us. Charlie Chipio, thank you so much. Senator Bob Hedlund and Jack Sullivan from Commonwealth Magazine. All right, one story that's always in the headlines is obesity. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is trying to cure it by banning supersized drinks. He started that pitch a few weeks ago, and now research out of Harvard Business School finds that banning these jumbo sizes may be our only hope to scaling down our size. We'll see why that's true. If it has something to do with our reptilian brains. Curious about that. Callie Crossley has that story. I'm Emily Rooney. You're listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH.